everyone. Welcome to the Negative Positives Podcast, episode number 299. I'm your host, Mike Gutterman, coming to you from the Gutterman Cave in a very warm Louisville, Kentucky, like 65 degrees Fahrenheit. It's pretty awesome. And in the pre-recording, I was talking to the co-host, and it's a little colder out there in California than it is here in Kentucky. So I'm a big winner this week, big wiener. But speaking of the co-host, the co-captains, everyone's favorite co-captains, I might say. Let's start with Mr. Andre Dominguez, all the way out in La La Land, Los Angeles, the City of Angels. How you doing tonight, Andre?
It's about 50 something here in what used to be sunny Los Angeles, and I'm wrapped in a fuzzy blanket, really wanting to finish up this beer so I can switch to some nice warming whiskey.
Nice. And all the way out in let's see, I'm gonna get it right this time. Desert Springs, California, is that right?
Palm Springs, California.
Still messing it up. Palm Springs, California. This is Roxana Ankles. How you doing tonight, Roxana?
I'm doing great. I'm with Andre, though. I'm freezing today. It was cold and windy, and I don't want to talk about it. I was in a sweater all day and still freezing.
Ah, evil laughter.
finally, karma.
My weather's better than yours, so I'm loving it. But all right, so without further ado, we're very excited to have this gentleman on, and it's been probably too long. We should have had him on a long time ago. He's famous, you know. I think, but it's none other than Mr. Mike Caputo, all the way out in the land of Hawaii. Aloha, Mike. How you doing?
Hooah! Doing well, thanks. Very well.
Nice. Well, I'm very excited to have you on because you have been an ambassador for dad jokes, and I love a good dad joke. And there's a great video you have out. I think you told me it went viral, and maybe your local television station actually covered it because it got so many views. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, it had some around 3.5 million views, which for me, that was a lot. 3.5 million on Facebook. If I would have put that sucker on YouTube, I could have had like 30 grand. I feel like an idiot. The last joke's on me, I guess. It's fun though.
Yeah. It's if you guys haven't seen it, you should check it out. I think it's still on your Facebook, I believe, right? Yeah. But it's basically you kind of torturing your fellow firemen at the.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's very
just
very
annoying
very...
the hell out of my coworkers.
it's great, we thoroughly enjoy it. I was telling the gang before we started recording, I showed that video to my wife and my oldest son before I came out here to record, and my wife loved it, and my oldest son, he not so much. He's not a huge fan of the dad jokes. I think I've wore out my welcome on that, and my wife just probably liked it because, well, let's just face it, Mr. Mike Caputo, he's a good-looking dude there, that guy, but all right, so this is Mike's first appearance on the Negative Positives, and hopefully not the last. So I think it's in case people don't know him, and they should. How about Mike? You kind of tell the fine folks a little bit about how you got into photography, a little bit about yourself.
Sure, my name is Mike Caputo. I am from Chicago. I'm a Chicagoan, and I moved out to Hawaii about 15 years ago. I came out here on a ship. I was a merchant marine. And had a family, and after that, I got a job in the fire department here on the Big Island. So I'm an aircraft rescue firefighter right now, and I've been doing that for the last 7 years. And along the way, I got into film photography while I was out here. I picked up a Nikonos and started doing some water photography, and then it just led me to have severe gas. I got more and more cameras, and... Next thing you know, I was developing my own film, and now I own a community darkroom out here. So it's been quite an interesting journey with photography, an exciting one. Each day is great, you know. It's having a community darkroom and finding new film shooters all the time. It's really fantastic.
Wow, that's a hell of a journey through film photography, man. You went all in. So, when you first started, was you interested in photography like in your younger years or anything, or is this kind of something that just came on later? Did you go through did you get a digital camera first and then transition to film, or did you just say, hey, film looks way cooler, I'm just gonna go straight for that?
Well, my grandfather, I have his speed graphic. He had a darkroom in his basement. And so I was interested in it, but not enough to really take it up myself. I took photography in high school. I can't even remember if I passed or not. I don't think I did. You know, it's supposed to be an easy elective, but I didn't care enough about it to even I wasn't the best student, let's just say that.
Sounds like my high school photography class.
But then slowly, yeah, I mean, I've traveled all over the world. I was in the Air Force, and I was stationed out in England for 4 years. And then after the Air Force, I was a merchant marine working on ships. So I sailed all over the world, and I never took one picture.
Wow.
All the places I've been. So photography has really developed for me in the last, I'd say, 7 years or so. Mm-hmm. And I started with the digital camera. I had a Sigma DP2 Merrill, which is a pretty nice camera for a digital camera. But once I saw some film photography of a couple buddies of mine on Oahu, they were shooting Iconoses all the time. Just all that surf photography. I thought, wow, I got to get into that. So that's kind of what led me to film photography.
Is that kind of the first thing you started doing with a lot of surf photography since you started with an Iconos?
Yeah, the first roll of film I shot was at Pipeline during the Pipe Masters, and that might have been 2013 or 14, I think. Mm. I didn't go out in the water. I mean, it was crazy out there, of course, and the contest was going on. I was shooting it from land. But yeah, roll of film I shot was, I think, some T-Max, and I still have those negatives. And I actually just made some prints from that first roll. It was fun to go back and make some prints from that first roll I shot all that time ago.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, it's funny. I feel like I have a little Hawaii connection. My dad was stationed in Hawaii in the military. And so I've seen like slideshows of his slides when he was in Hawaii. And I've had all this fascination with just that area for pretty much my whole life. And then I come to find out that I was actually conceived in Hawaii.
Very nice. So, got some aloha in you too then.
So the bad thing is I was born here in Kentucky. So my mom came home before she had me. So I've never actually been in Hawaii, except maybe in my mom's womb. But so it might be a little too much information.
Those slides are nice though. What a
crowd. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's super cool, man. Like to see those. I kind of want him to break those out again and do a little slideshow. I'd love to see those again. It's like since I was a kid last time he pulled those out, and but it was just so cool to see like all these. You know, there's a photo of my mom by a rock, and like this wave in the way out in the ocean is like it's huge. I mean, he said like I don't know how big he said the waves were that day, but like I think right after the picture, like the wave basically crashed right where she was standing. So like so. Yeah, but crazy stuff. But isn't it like December or something that the waves get really huge there or something? I think it's when he said he took it. Isn't it like wintertime is when the waves are gigantic, or I don't know.
Right. Usually wintertime is when all the big swells come out of the north.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
okay.
Summertime, you get the south swells, which sometimes are pretty big, but like all the really nice surf spots and stuff, mostly the North Shore contests and everything. It's all north swells, northwest, northeast. Yeah, definitely.
Right. Well, I think we got a little bit of background on Mike, and we're going to have a whole lot more to find out about this this man of adventure, it sounds to me like. He's been all over the damn world, I mean, so. So we'll dive in a little bit more with Mike in the next segments, but this is the first segment. We like to talk about what we've been up to lately, and since it's we're on this, like, two-week schedule now, I feel like it's been forever since I talked to you guys, but I'm kind of digging this new schedule with the podcast, so we usually start with Andre. Andre, what have you been up to lately?
So, you know, it's a cliche that you hear a lot about, that whole, you know, new year, new me thing. And I can't even really blame Roxana for lighting a fire under my butt, because as of yet, I haven't received any any angry mom like emails or encouraging challenges from our new co-host. So this has all been 100% self motivated. But yeah, no, I've actually been probably more active photographically as well as in the Facebook group in the past couple weeks than I have been maybe in a couple of years. My roll count since the last time we recorded is up to, I think, 9 rolls the last time I checked. Nice. A decent bit of that actually shooting some 800T at night, which is really not something that I do a whole lot of, ironically. But I decided to just, pick up some film, instead of going straight back to the metro station to come back home, see if I could do a little bit of nighttime street photography in and around Hollywood on Hollywood Boulevard and a little bit on Sunset Boulevard, trying to photograph a mix of neon signs as well as certain kind of period specific things that I noticed that were happening the past few days. A lot of signs on buses and theaters of rest in peace Kobe Bryant, naturally the city grieving. Not that I particularly have a huge connection with the sport, not being really a basketball fan, but trying to kind of be in that mindset of, if you're in a place and notice something where you're like, should I take a picture of that? I'm not sure. Well, is that thing going to be around? And usually that's in the context of a building or some kind of business that may not be there in 5-10 years. Because this was sort of an event rather important to the city of Los Angeles, I decided to try to see if I could take some interesting photos of different sorts of public tributes to him and his daughter who passed away, as well as a few other families, if I remember correctly, that went down in the helicopter. So just trying to do a little bit of nighttime street photography with 800T, which is something that it's taken me about a year of working for CineStill to actually try my hand at doing that.
Nice. Have you developed that yet?
I have developed it. I haven't scanned it yet. Work, picked back up a little bit. And so probably tomorrow during my lunch break, I'll be scanning that in. But another kind of little experiment that I've been doing with 800T is that I found these little like gelatin filters that Adox, which is the in-house brand of our friends and European distributors, Photo Impex, make. And unlike your typical kind of glass filter, they don't actually kind of screw into the filter thread of your lens. They were actually laser cut, optical gelatin that is sort of cut into, like, imagine like this spiky sun type thing. And those little kind of spikes on the edge of the filter just actually kind of bite in and push into the actual filter threads of your lens. And they were so kind as to make a 85 filter for specifically for shooting tungsten film in daylight.
Yeah.
T being a tungsten balanced color film. And so I've been doing a little bit of testing with those. I've got a few people who, shoot a fair amount of 800T that I'm going to be sending them off to some friends to do some testing, because I personally really want to carry them in the CineStill online store. I think it's a product that makes a lot of sense. And I've been enjoying being able to have a roll of 800T in my camera and shoot it, at night, doing like the main things that I want to be doing with it. But, 9 times out of 10, I haven't shot the entire roll and I've still got it in my camera the next day. Enjoying being able to just slap that filter on, not worrying about, breaking it or anything, which I've done more times than I care to admit with glass filters, and seeing how it looks in daylight with that 85 warming filter to also cut down how much time I have to spend color correcting, which is not typically something that I'm the best at.
Yeah, I saw your face cast on those filters. And it's the first time I'd actually seen what they look like. And I think I'd heard you talk about them, or maybe me and you talked about them one time on a phone call or something. But when once I saw them, I was like, I think I'm going to have to invest in some of these, man, because like, you could get a lot of filters in your bag and not take up much space. And like, I'd love to have like a red, a yellow, and an orange, mm-hmm. maybe. And especially like if you have like a big lens that has like huge filter sizes, which can be a real pricey filter. Yep. I'm guessing that's going to be a whole lot cheaper. What kind of price range are those things around? Do you know?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I mm-hmm. would be surprised if they were, you know, more than, you know, $10 a filter. And right. like you said, the fact that they're, you know, just flat, they've got a little hang tab that tells you, you know, it's got a little engraving on it that tells you the actual size of the filter. Mm-hmm. So on the lenses that I have for my Nikon F100, my biggest lens is a 62 millimeter filter thread. And then on my 35 and my 24, I've got, you know, step up rings to step up to 62. So being able to have, you know, a relatively large size 85 filter, it would have been a lot more expensive if I went for a glass filter. And sure. and the thought of, you know, I can carry, if I'm carrying the F100 and my M2 and my Rolleiflex in my bag, kind of juggling all these different filter sizes, because I'm not going to put a 62 millimeter step-up ring on my Rolleiflex taking lens. Mm-hmm. Being able to have all those filters just in a little Ziploc baggie, with a little piece of cardstock in there to kind of keep everything flat and make sure that nothing gets, you know, folded or crinkled. Right. You know, it's something that I really want to explore more and see if I can place an order and get that in the online store, hopefully sooner rather than later, because I've been really enjoying using it and I think a lot of people would really like it.
Yeah, I think they're awesome. And if you check the Facebook group, Andre has a face cast where he kind of shows how those filters look and how they work. And it's take a look at that. It's I think these are a really a fantastic idea and something I'm definitely going to be looking at investing in soon. So, yeah. Andre, anything else?
Yeah, no, other than just, you know, doing a little bit more shooting, doing some face casts, which I've been enjoying, kind of trying to be a little bit more active in the Facebook group. The other thing that I've kind of set as a personal goal for myself is to really learn how to use the Frontier scanner at work. I'm probably going to be selling both my Epson V600 as well as my Pacon F135, just to kind of free up some money to probably spend on some other camera equipment. I'm really wanting to pick up that Lightpix Labs little wireless flash, mm-hmm. That you can use both in the hot shoe, but then also, you know, just take it right off and it's got the little wireless transmitter that stays in the hot shoe, and you can hold the little flash that's about the size of a cell phone off camera. And maybe sometime later this year, pick up a Lomography LCA 120.
Look out.
Look out. Yeah, it's been a little bit of a journey kind of learning the Frontier and trying to, you know, do a little bit here and there. I've already done kind of preview scans of about 10 or 12 rolls that were just kind of sitting in a plastic bag uncut in the just long uncut strip here in my apartment, because my idea is to just with the auto carrier that kind of works the same as the Pacon, it runs the entire long uncut strip all in one go, you know, brings up the preview images and then you can make your corrections. I've just been putting it on like the lowest resolution option and not doing any color correcting, just kind of hitting the enter button just so that I have essentially kind of like a thumbnail. It's probably fine to print up to like 5x7, but I'm not doing any adjustments to exposure or contrast or color, just so that I have a folder that I can essentially have a digital contact sheet of what those images look like to then go back and say, all right, I want to properly scan and, you know, take my time with frames, you know, 3, 7, 12, and 16.
Yeah,
and
the
then
smash
I can
hits.
Swap that over. Exactly. Then I can swap over to the manual negative carrier, which brings up a much larger preview image on the screen, because the resolution of that screen of the Frontier is really bad because these are old scanners, at least ours is an older version. And really then kind of sit down on a lunch break, start learning how to better color correct my scans, and then those files can then, you know, spit out some large high resolution TIFFs that I can then go into Lightroom and get rid of any dust and stuff.
Well, I guess it makes sense. I mean, there's probably really no reason to have a scanner at home if you've got like this this pro, you know, industrial grade scanner at your workplace, right? So I guess it makes some sense. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'll give you permission to do that. So
yeah, that's been my couple weeks. I don't know if the next couple weeks are going to be as busy, given that, you know, there's Valentine's Day stuff and you know, work's been picking back up and I'm being trained on some new things at work, but it's been enjoyable doing a whole lot more shooting. At the very least, I'll be doing some scanning before the next time we chat.
Awesome. All right, Roxana, that means you're up. What have you been up to? I'm sure you always have a lot, and I'm sure you're not gonna disappoint us yet again. So there you go.
Always a lot. I'm working on my next set of zines. So nice. Yeah, and you know, the first process is actually making the little booklets, as you two know. but it's been a lot of fun. So I'm at like halfway through that, and I, at school, my kids in the film club, they've been doing really good work. We're trying to get our stuff together because we have a benefit coming up that we want to sell. I want to frame their work and sell it.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited. They're excited too, because they're like, wait, what? We're going to sell our 8x10s. I'd actually like to take their favorite ones and maybe even just blow them up in my darkroom, though, and have like darkroom prints. I think that'd be awesome. Really nice.
You know, I hope you sell them for more than Mike Gutterman prices, because I have to basically give my photography away for like $20 and $30 for an 8x10, because that's the only way I can get people to buy them at art shows. So hopefully you can get more than my price structure. But
well, I'm pretty sure their parents are going to be the one to buy it.
Right. a little guilt trip. Yeah.
That's usually the way it works. But, and yeah, I actually started, I have quite a few kids in my club, but I've been trying to think of a way to kind of expand it exposure wise. So mm-hmm. I've been doing a lot of work in mindfulness and putting photography together with, so like, mindful photography, really, where you learn how to slow down and be in the moment with it. And so I'm going to start running a small group like once every 2 weeks and teaching it and using like the point and shoots for it. So awesome. That's something I'm working on that's in the works. It's not ready to go yet, but I'm writing the 6-7 week curriculum for it.
Well, I mean, since I guess we should take this opportunity to kind of congratulate ourselves, because I mean, since this podcast, and I probably should have said it in the announcement when I first came on, is since this podcast did win the Sunnies Award for Best Podcast of 2019, I mean, we have 20 billion listeners now. So, I mean, you shouldn't have to endorse it too much. I mean, everyone would know about it, right? So, yeah. But big thanks to everyone that voted for this podcast and the Sunnies Award. So congratulations Yay. To yourselves. So yeah, good job, everybody.
Well done.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, Roxana, after we got that bragging segment out there.
Segment, you know, it's all the work that we're doing, all the work. My goal is just to spread film photography and marry it along with my counseling practice somehow. So
yeah, I think what you're doing with that is incredible. And it's always good to hear. Just you're kind of every 2 week updates about what's going on with the kids. It's very, very interesting. And so when is the art show? When will that be happening?
I think it's not until May. So right now they're still kind of shooting for it and we're developing and picking our favorites, but we have it in mind, and I'm getting the frames in the mail soon. So I want to have it all lined up so we're not scrambling it until the last minute.
Sure. Do you all have like projects where it's like you're trying to shoot a certain theme, or you just kind of let the kids just kind of do what they want? Is there sort of any sort of structure that way, or?
You know, I was going to, and I was hoping to set it around the theme of the benefit, but I haven't heard what that theme is yet. So it's hard to give the kids a theme. I don't want to give them a theme if it's going to be the opposite of something that they've created. So that would be awkward. So I don't know. I'm like, shoot, as it, for something that you want to display has just been my phrase to them, just go and do whatever it is that you want to display and go for it, you know. That's just be creative.
The way photography ought to be, right? Whatever catches your eye. So yeah,
exactly. And we all have a different eye and gravitate towards different subjects.
All right, Roxanne, is that pretty much what you've been up to?
Yeah, that's it.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's move on to our guest, Mr. Mike Caputo. What have you been up to, Mike? I mean, I know you've
just creeping on Roxanna's Instagram these last few minutes, checking out her photos. Very nice.
She's great. She's great. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Interesting. I would go way back, too. The Polaroids.
Thanks. That's a huge compliment coming from you. Your stuff is like mind blowing. So thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Very cool.
All right, yeah, Mike, what are you doing? I know you're awestruck by Roxanna's, it's leaving you speechless, but that's.
Radio's worst enemy. I've been very busy. I was just in a play. I played Sergeant Toomey in Biloxi Blues, and
nice.
We rehearsed for the last 6 weeks, and we had our play last weekend. So it was a short opening weekend. We only had one weekend. We rehearsed 6 weeks, and then opening night was Friday. Another performance on Saturday, and then one on Sunday. And it was a lot of work. I had never been in a play before. Mm-hmm. This first time. My daughter is into theater, and the director that she's worked with before, he came up to me and said, Mike, would you be interested in being in a play with me? I was like, hell no. Of course not. And goes, well, it's a drill sergeant. I think you'd fit the role well, and you know, it'd be a lot of fun. I thought about it. I said, you know what, that does sound like a lot of fun. So I can't believe what a great time it was. It was such a good show. So I've been taking pictures backstage and of the set and while we were rehearsing. So really, that's the only photography I've done in the last 6 weeks or so, was just taking stuff of the performance, or the rehearsals, I should say. And I'd swing by the dark room every now and then, develop some roles and make contact sheets and scribble on them and then give them to the cast. And right before our closing show on Sunday, I went to the dark room earlier and made a bunch of prints for everybody. So I gave them, everybody got at least one contact sheet, and then they got one 8x10 print. It wasn't too nice. Big, so it was pretty easy to do, but everybody really enjoyed getting that. And it's just something nice to take home from the show as well. So.
That is so cool.
That's really all I've done with photography in the last 6 weeks or so, because I was also working in between all that rehearsal and stuff as well.
Mike, I think maybe having you on the show is going to give me some sort of inferiority complex or something. I mean, is there anything you don't do, like actor, photographer, fireman, like world traveler, like good
Well, you know, I just like to dabble. I'm not very good at any one thing. I just like to dabble at lots of things. So.
Well, sometimes that's what you got to do. That's what I did with this podcast, man. I just kept throwing it at the wall and see until it stuck. So,
there you go. You got a great show going.
Well, thank you, sir.
It was such a good time. I mean, I never realized how much work went into theater. So I developed a new appreciation for it. And I had a great time on stage. I wasn't too nervous, but there was a lot of lines. But I have a 2-hour commute to work because I work. Fire station is on the other side of the island. So I just say my lines back and forth, you know, on my commute. And before I know it, I had them all down. It'd take me about an hour to say them all. So I had to memorize about an hour of dialogue.
Yikes.
But I was ready. Wow. I mean, it was such a fun role, too. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Biloxi Blues back in the 80s. It came out.
I did not play
Christopher Walken. Christopher Walken played Sergeant Toomey in the movie. I took more of the Gunnery Sergeant Hartman approach to it.
nice. So, yeah. Well, I mean, it'd be hard to, it'd be kind of hard to replicate Walken, right? So he has a different style of speech pattern. So
he does. He's Christopher Walken in every movie.
Right. I've always said, friends and I, sometimes we're at a bar and, the typical bar conversations come up. And one of our conversations is like, what actor would you like to go out drinking with one night? And Christopher Walken is always in our top five, because I just would love to listen to his voice, the way his speech pattern for a night, especially if it got a little tipsy. That could be I think Walken would be a fun drinking partner. So
hell yeah. I'd like to tell you something, Mike Gutterman. I don't know, I can't do it.
Nice. All right, Mike, is that pretty much what you've been up to? It sounds like that's plenty, but yeah, I just want to make sure you got everything.
Yeah, that's it. That's it as far as photography goes. Just taking pictures of Biloxi Blues and swinging by the darkroom every now and then. And now I just started a special duty assignment at work where I am a recruit training officer for the Fire Academy. So for the next 6 months, that whole play was just like a warm up for the real deal.
There you go. You got to whip them into shape, right?
So. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's not much difference between how I played my character and how I play my character and the recruit trainings. Pretty funny stuff.
That's good. Oh, congratulations on that, though. That's really cool.
Yeah, thank you. It is. I'm really looking forward to it.
That's awesome. So one question that kind of pops in my head. So you're shooting, kind of behind the scenes a little bit of this play. I'm guessing the lighting's not that great. I mean, I guess some of the stage lighting can be, but I'm sure you're in low light quite a bit. What did you do for film choices for that? Did you have any trouble with low light, or how'd you tackle that?
I usually always shoot Tri-X, and if something like that, I'll just push it to 3200.
Mm-hmm.
Works out fine. And I use a Minolta Autocord, so I use a twin lens reflex. And that thing, I could shoot it at 1/15th or 1/30, and it's still pretty steady.
Okay.
So at 1/15th, f3.5, it's fine at 3200. And especially when the theater lights are out, if the other cast members were on stage rehearsing with the spotlights on them and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I would still leave the aperture at about 3.5, but then I could bump it up to 1/125th or so, which is kind of nice. But yeah, all I really shoot nowadays is medium format. Every now and then, if I shoot color film, I'll bust out the Nikon F3 for slides.
Mm.
But other than that, I'm always shooting medium format.
So I saw that a few months ago, you stuck a. I know that you're a fan of the Nikonos in 35mm, but I saw that you did some surf photography, sticking a hole inside of a Ziploc bag.
Yeah. Yeah. It worked pretty good.
It did. So, the results were awesome.
I tried it at first by leaving it in the bag, and it sucked. So that doesn't work. So you have to take it out of the bag. And that's the tricky part, is when the waves are kind of big and you're on a surfboard and you're sitting out there on the shoulder, and I have the Ziploc bag in my mouth while I'm paddling. And
then
I got to open the Ziploc bag and take the whole guy out of the bag. And I'm trying to get shots while the guys are on the wave, so I'm on the shoulder and the wave is sort of carrying me upward and it's bouncing me around, and I'm trying to not drop the camera in the water at the same time and keep it dry and get the shot. But if it drops in the water, who cares?
It's a whole gun, right?
Yeah. And it's like film soup.
Yeah.
Some salt water.
So I did that for, a couple days in a row, and I wound up getting a few decent rolls with that. Good.
That's
time.
Awesome.
Wow.
On your, I guess, the TLR you were using, does it have a built-in meter, or was you metering externally? How was you doing that with the photographs of the play behind the scenes and all that?
I use an iPhone app for
yep, yep.
called Light Meter.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, that's great.
So I'll just use that.
Wow. And you must, on top of all these kind of jack of all trades that you seem to be, you must have rock steady hands. 1/15th of a second. That's pretty slow there, man. Like, so.
Yeah, it's not too bad. I mean, that's as slow as I'll go. But you know, as long as you're keeping those hands steady, you could get a decent shot. I mean, it's not going to be too blurry. Plus, the theater, who cares if it's a little blurry, right? It adds to it, I guess.
Action photos, right?
Action. That's right.
All right, Mike, is that pretty much I think that's, we've pretty much wrapped up your week, right? Or your weeks, or your recently. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, for me, I know you guys have heard me talk about this quite a bit. I actually sold some cameras this week. So, and I have to say, some kind of heavyweights in the industry are getting, I just sent them out today, are getting some cameras from my collection. Christine Bartolucci from the Analog Talk podcast bought a Pentax 645 body from me. So that was very nice to kind of sell that to someone knowing it's going to a good home. And then also Mr. Mike Padua from Shoot Film Co. bought my Pentax MX from me. So, I hated selling these cameras, but, you know, I've been off work for a little over a month and funds have gotten a little tight. So it was time to let a few go. And but it's nice knowing that they're going to like some really good homes. So that made me quite happy to kind of send those out. It made it a little less painful knowing they're going to some good people. So and then also I guess it was, I don't know if I talked about this on the podcast yet or not. I know I did maybe a face cast on it or something, but this is last week. Went to John Gregory's house, to his darkroom, and did some darkroom printing for the first time since 1989 in my senior year in high school when I got kicked out of the darkroom for being a lazy ass. And so it was nice to kind of make some prints again for the first time in over 30 years. So
nice.
It was fun, man. I got two prints out of it, and it was just I'd forgotten how much fun it was, and actually. Honestly, I think in my mind I had the process a lot more complicated than it actually is. I mean, it's pretty easy to get a decent print with just some, you know, doing your test strips and all that, and you know, it's a lot easier to dial in than I thought it than I had remembered in my mind from 1989 or whatever. But it was a lot of fun. But what else here? There was one day I did do some shooting. Finally. I finally got to the point where I can walk around a little bit better on this knee after my knee surgery. And so I had to go to the doctor to get the stitches out of my knee. So after that, I was like, oh, you got these stitches out and it feels so much better to have those things out of there. And I'm going to take some photos. I got a couple hours to kill and before my kids get out of school. So take some photos. And so I went down to kind of an area of town that I've probably overshot, but there's a guitar store down there and I wanted to walk in there and look at the guitars. So it's like, I'll just take some photos around there. Andre, you might remember this, the Highlands area that we walked around, when you were in Louisville.
It's a lot of pictures of you bent over with your butt crack showing there somewhere in my negative binders.
Nice. Well, I was probably showing some butt crack on this one too, because I had to wear some very loose sweatpants because they had to get to my knee and to take these stitches out. So I was probably showing some crack there too. But I go to this guitar store, look at the guitars, and like, well, I can't afford any of this stuff, but it's fun to do. And so I was like, I'm going to walk around here and take some photos. Well, I had a couple of 35 millimeter cameras and like I had my Kodak Brownie Hawkeye with me because this Neil Piper's Project Box Camera thing he's got going on. It's like, well, I can go ahead and get a head start on this project that starts this month, actually. And so I had like a roll. It was like half finished. Let me go ahead and finish this roll. So I finished it and I was like, okay, well, I need to change this film out and put another roll in here. So I go back to my car and I'm just going to sit in my car and change the film out. And so I sit in my car, change the film out. And then I closed my car door and I locked my keys in the car. And,
oh my gosh. Oh no.
Oh yeah. So 1 hour and $60 later, a locksmith comes out and gets my keys out of my car. And so it kind of put a little damper in my shooting, but I was like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm going to get something done. So I did kind of walk that area a little bit more and I finished, almost finished a roll of Ektachrome E100 in the Leica. And then I then took I also finished about a 3/4 of a row for the first time of some Fuji Akros. I've never shot it before, and I had a roll of that in Pentax P30T.
Is that the new stuff or the old stuff?
This row was the old stuff. I do have some new stuff that someone gifted me, but this was one of the older ones. So I'd be interested to see. I've never shot that film, so it'd be kind of looking forward to finishing those rows and see what it looks like, see what the hubbub's about. So yeah. And then the last thing is I did get a couple of packages in the mail, and I just want to do a quick thanks here. I'm going to talk about them because they left me nice notes and quite a bit in these boxes of love. So I'll talk about those on my next solo show. But just a little quick thanks to Mr. Christian Hillen and Angela Solis, who sent me some really cool packages in the mail on this last week. And thank you guys. And I will talk about those on an upcoming solo show where I have a little more time to talk about just these awesome notes you guys sent and some of the goodies, and just very, very cool. And I really appreciate it. So, all right. Well, that's pretty much our weeks. And I think we'll go ahead and take ourselves a little break here. And we'll come back with questions from the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group to Mr. Mike Caputo. So we'll take a break and be right back, folks. Folks, we're back from the break, and I wish I had recorded a whole lot more of that break because we talked about all sorts of good stuff, and including the delicacy of spam. And now I'm hungry, and we have a bunch of questions to Mr. Mike Caputo from the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group, and so let's go ahead and dive right into those. Andre, what do we got up first?
First question comes from Bill Thu, who asks, "What do you need to do differently, if anything, when you are a film photographer in the tropics?" And love the star trails, by the way.
Thanks, Bill. Dress cooler. That's about it. For real, there is no really big difference, I would say.
Do you tend to like store your film in the fridge? I know, like I've heard of folks in colder climates will just sort of leave their film out. I tend to leave my film out here, despite living in Southern California. I don't really tend to hoard much of it. So I'm not really worried about refrigerating it or anything like that. How do you go about storing it?
I go through my film pretty quick. So I just leave it in my drawer in the house. And we don't have AC here either. So not many people have AC. So I don't store it any differently. If it's black and white film, I usually develop it pretty quickly. But color film, I'll shoot, and I don't send my color film in maybe except a couple times a year in a big batch. Like I'll have 20 rolls of slide film that I send in. But those I just leave in the drawer as well. And I haven't seemed to have any problems with it. I just never leave it in the car. I mean,
there you go.
It would be ruined in a day. But in the house, it's totally fine. You know?
Nice. Well, I think a lot of times people, sometimes we get a little bit too precious about film. It's a little more hardy than we give it credit for, to be honest with you.
Oh, absolutely. And especially with my developing techniques, I am the least meticulous person when it comes to developing. I mean, I miss rotations or agitations all the time. I let it go long, extra minutes when I develop, or I pull it out too quickly. Film. And I don't really pay attention to the numbers. I never even measure the temperature when I develop. I just go by room temperature, whatever room temperature might be with the chemistry and my results. I'm always happy with the results. So, of course, as long as there's something on there that I could see in print, I'm happy.
Yeah. All right, Andre, what we got next?
Next up, Bill Smith of the Classic Camera Revival podcast asks, do you have to online order all of your supplies?
Howdy, Bill. Sure do. There is one store on Oahu that supplies photographic stuff, Treehouse, and the owner of that shop is a good buddy of mine. So sometimes I'll order supplies from him, or I order from Freestyler B&H. But yeah, everything I get is off island. Everything. The only thing I buy out of here, like Fuji Instax stuff, Walmart or whatever. But everything else comes from either Treehouse or the mainland.
Mm. Do you sell any? Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Do you sell any of it in your dark room? Just out of curiosity.
We used to have some film for sale, but not really anymore. Like I said, the whole business model with the darkroom has changed recently since I got promoted and transferred to the other side of the island. Mm. So, no, right now we don't really sell any film out of there. And when we did, it was just one stock. It was just Kodak TX400. That's it. That's all we had available for people to buy. Yep, that's it.
Is shipping outrageous? Do you kind of just buy in bulk to try to alleviate some of the shipping costs, or is it outrageous out there?
Yeah, it pretty much sucks, especially if you order from B&H, it tags on like $50 or $40 to whatever I'm ordering. So
wow.
I try to order in bulk. I usually order like once a month. But like I said, I do order from Treehouse quite a bit. So
Do you bulk load? Because it seemed like that would buying like 100 foot of it at a time might help you a little bit. Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah, I've got a couple bulk loaders, but I just too lazy to tell you the truth. I have a lot of old film like Plus X and all these old Kodak stocks. A museum had a bunch of them in the refrigerator, so I've got about like 1,000 feet of all this old film.
Oh wow!
And just haven't put them into the bulk loaders yet, but I'm pretty excited to shoot it because it's, I don't know, it's all from the early 80s. Some of it's from the 70s, 90s. I've been testing it out a little bit here and there, but I don't shoot much 35. It's all in 35. Usually I shoot 120 now, so I'll get to it eventually, but it's nice to have a little backup.
Hell yeah. Especially if it's Plus X. Plus X is a beautiful film. And that's one that I hope Kodak brings back. I keep saying it. But, like, yeah, Plus X is beautiful. But, yeah.
It looks fantastic. So I am eager to try it. I just haven't had much time for it lately.
Awesome. All right, Andre, what's up next?
Mr. Ben Reynolds asks, do you still shoot 16mm movies on the K3s? And do you process your footage yourself? Yes, I'm referring to the many-armed Mike photo.
I bet. Man, I wish. I sold all my movie cameras just because of the cost of processing and film. There was a film studio on Oahu that had closed down, and I wound up getting thousands of feet of 16mm and 35mm movie motion picture film for like $100. I must have got 20 400-foot reels of 16mm. And it was probably, 10 or 15 400-foot reels of 35mm film. So I sold a lot of it on eBay and donated some to the Film Photography Project. And then I used
I remember Mike Rosso talking about you sending him a bunch of stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, I did. And I think he's still selling it on his site. So, I mean, that's great. That's why I did it. I sent it to him, you know. Mike will put it to good use, and he did. And so I sold all the 35mm motion picture stuff and then used the money to buy those 16mm cameras and then shot up all the 16mm film. But it gets so expensive that with everything else going on, I just don't do it anymore. And how expensive Super 8 is, too. And gosh, it's so hard to spend $100 for 3 minutes as much as I want to.
Yeah, it's so beautiful, though.
It is. It's just so great. But it's been a while since I've done it. When I opened the darkroom, most of my extra cash for photography, everything went into the darkroom, basically. So that's been my primary focus. But eventually, I'd like to get back into the motion picture stuff, for sure.
Yeah. I definitely want to shoot more of it myself. I had some family footage I took in Florida on Super 8, and I love it. And it's like one of my favorite like things about that trip was like getting these like 6 minutes of footage. I did two like cartridges, Super 8, and just getting like the 6 minutes of footage from that trip. You know, if you do it right, you can really kind of capture a week-long trip in like 3 6 minutes or whatever. If you just, you know, quick little 5 second clips, man. You know, I like the 5 second thing, like count to five every time you hit that button. And just keep it quick, you know, don't linger on something for too long. That shit ain't cheap. So yeah.
And you know, 5 seconds tends to be enough, because if you go longer than that, usually you'd want to edit that stuff out anyway. It gets boring really quick. So I always kept everything in between 3 and 5 seconds as well when I pulled the trigger on.
Yeah.
But it is great. And I would like to shoot some of the Ektachrome at Super 8.
Yeah,
especially if they have 16. Oh, man, that would be so awesome. Be able to project that stuff. And so we'll see. We'll see how things go. But I hope it's on the horizon.
Awesome. All right, Andre, what's up next?
Next up, we have a question from Mr. Anthony Cronin. It's a little bit of a long one. He says, thin negatives. Has the hybrid workflow of scanners made us less aware of overdevelopment in black and white film? Many are like me, I assume, scanning for now, but daydreaming of the retirement darkroom. One thing I remember so vividly in my darkroom days was how important it was to have the negs exposed and developed correctly, to have thin negatives as opposed to underdeveloped, so printing times were reasonable. Scanners are, in my humble opinion, more forgiving and can fish detail from overdeveloped negatives. Do you find that people are no longer developing to print, but developing to scan? Is there a difference at all in your opinion? This was all triggered by a visit recently to a community darkroom, and some of the negs I saw people trying to develop on enlargers were so thick or dense, you could use them as light seal material.
Interesting. Interesting question. It's a good one, too. I developed print. I mean, that's my objective, is to make nice prints. I don't care about a scan. A scan, for me, is just a fun thing to have for social media. But what I really like is a really nice contact sheet. Like, I even print my contact sheets on fiber paper, just because when you have a contact sheet with 6x6 negatives, 120 film, it's fantastic. You know, it's a wonderful thing to have. And I scribble on it, write on it, write my little notes on it with the red grease pen. And so I developed print. I read an interesting article about developing to scan from this fellow named Johnny out on the East Coast. And one of the members of the darkroom, he overexposes. I never understood it correctly. I don't know. But he's always trying to develop his negatives differently to get the best negatives for a scan. So we really don't have that many members, and most people who come to the community darkroom here are just trying to develop the negatives to get something on them, anything. Right? So
yeah.
They haven't gotten that technical yet, but me personally, I always try to develop so I get a good negative to print, because that's really what I want. Is I want the albums, the photo albums, to give to my kids. I want lots of prints in my house. I want all the contact sheets to be able to go through years down the road and look back on. So who knows what will happen with all the hard drives and the internet stuff and the digital scans. So that's primarily my objective. And I hate scanning. I can't stand it.
That's the way most people feel, yeah.
Grueling task, and I do it. And usually what I do is I'll make a contact sheet immediately right after I develop a roll of film. And then I'll see if there's anything on there even worth scanning, if I even feel like scanning. So I always do contact sheets, then prints. And then if I get around to it, I'll make a scan.
Yeah, I'm just not that technical, I guess. Like, I've never been one to really experiment a whole lot with developing. I just want to get images on the negatives. I'm primarily a scanner. I don't have access to a darkroom unless I keep bothering John Gregory. But like, so I don't really have that kind of workflow. Roxana, you do some darkroom work. Do you kind of develop? Because I know you also scan your images, obviously, but you mm-hmm. do darkroom work as well. Do you kind of develop thinking more from how you're going to be able to print this in a darkroom, or is that part of your workflow?
You know, I always scan first, and then I see what my favorites are, and if it's black and white. The thing is that. I shoot so much color that I've been really pushing myself to shoot more black and white lately, just so I can print. And so I've been shifting a lot, but I'm torn because I love my color stuff so much. And I like my experimental weird suit lights and colors and sparkles.
It is kind of part of your style for sure. Yeah,
I know. So I'm torn because I love the dark room. Like I love to just put my earbuds in, have my favorite playlist, and get lost in it. So, but I have to like, I have to have enough negatives to like print them.
Yeah, I go in a full circle too. You know, sometimes there's some times where I just really want color film, color images, and stuff, and other times, it's just, okay, all I want to do is shoot black and white so I can make prints. Yeah. And having a dark room, having a community dark room, and access to it all the time, anytime I want, it's just, it's actually hard to load a color roll because I know, okay, I got to send this out, I got to send it to somebody else. And, I mean, I could do it there, but I don't bother with color. It's just a strictly black and white lab.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's kinda, yeah.
Shoot every now and then I'll shoot color, and I usually don't send it out so long after that I don't even know what's on there anymore when I get it back. So it's a surprise. It's like, oh cool, that happened.
Do you develop your own color though ever?
Nope.
It's easy.
It is easy.
I'm sure it is. And you know what, one of the darkroom members even bought the chemistry and has a kit there, and he's like, you could use it anytime you want. It's just one of those things where I have to do it. And
yeah,
I have so many rolls of black and white film that I still need to develop. I don't even know what's on the Zetas. And that's kind of why I only shoot 120 now as well, because I don't want 36 pictures to choose from. Right. Way too many to choose
from. So many.
12 is plenty for me, because even out of those 12, I might only print a quarter of them.
Yeah. So
that's enough.
I could feel you on that, because like when I go out and shoot, if I'm shooting 35, I always come home with half to three quarters of the row finished. But at 120, when I'm shooting that, I always come home with two rows finished. Like, you know, and so it just drives me crazy. Anytime I shoot 35, I never finish a row. But if I shoot 120, I finish rows. And like, there's, to me, like, I get like this sense of satisfaction of accomplishment of like finishing a roll of film. I don't know what it is. Like, oh, I finished a roll of film and now I can develop it and see what I got, you know? And so there's like this pride, like, yeah, I finished a roll of film, Mike, you did something this week, you know? And, but like, it takes me so long sometimes to finish these 36 exposure rolls. Like it never fails. I can never get them done in one pass, like in one outing or whatever. So it drives me crazy, but yeah.
And putting those little things on that steel reel is such a son of a bitch. I hate it. I like putting the 120 on the, you know, I only have steel reels. I'm just stubborn that way. I won't use plastic. I just hate the way it feels. So I use steel reels. And 120 is so easy to get on there. I could do it like 30 seconds. I could get a roll on no problem. If I'm doing 35, sometimes I'll be in that bag for 20 minutes, sweating, cursing, swearing, kicking enlargers, elbowing stuff around the room. I get so irritated and angry. Just never seems to go on right for me. So maybe that's why I shoot 120 as well.
One thing that I like to do quite a bit, because like I don't really want to buy a 100-foot roll of a film and be sort of married to that film stock for what's likely going to be at the rate that I shoot months and months, is if I ever want to, you know, try out a different film or just cut down the number of frames that I have in total, is I'll just go into the dark room where you could do it in the changing bag, and then just pull out, you know, half of the, well, pull out the entire, you know, roll of film, cut it in half, and then just like splice it or you know, tape it back onto the remaining bit of leader near the core, and you do that with two rolls. So then you've got two little mini rolls.
Mm. Nice.
That's a good
idea. Easier to put on the reel too.
Mm-hmm.
Know how many exposures that is exactly, but because it's not exactly half, because then you're also losing some with the new leader of that second mini one. But I've done that quite a bit for testing new film stocks, especially if I want to do, you know, a bunch of bracketing. Then I'll just split that 36 exposure roll into two smaller ones, or into four even smaller ones, and then testing and put them all in the same developing tank.
I should do that. That would help me a lot. These 36 exposure rolls, man. And honestly, I think I just prefer 24. You know, 36 is just too much. Because I almost always end around 24, 25, and then it's time for me to go home or whatever. And I'm like, shit, if this was a 24 exposure roll, I would have finished it. But no, I got like 10 shots left that I got to go out and shoot another day. So, like, maybe I should do that. That's a good idea. All right, Andre, what do we got? What we got next?
Next up, we have got a question from Mr. James Cleveland, who asked, favorite island fruit we don't get on the mainland?
Oh, James.
Is spam considered a fruit, by the way?
Yeah. I don't eat fruit. All I eat is meat and vegetables. No, not even vegetables. No, the favorite island fruit, the star fruit's pretty good. I really like that one. And lychee. Lychee is good. Mm. You know what that is?
That's the little sticky ball one, right?
The lychee? Yeah. Lychee's delicious. Is that on the mainland?
I've never heard of it, so it's certainly not in Kentucky.
in any hipster juice places here in Southern California?
I have no idea.
So there you go. That's it then.
Oh, see, we learned something. So what does it taste like? What's the closest fruit that it would be? Like, what am I looking at here? What family of fruit would this be?
Man, I don't even know. It's pretty...
What this one?
I guess it would be kind of like... it's got a hard skin on it, so... It's like nothing I've ever eaten out there, the lychee.
Huh.
Yeah.
Lychee. I feel like I've seen a picture of a lychee, though. That's all.
Well, Google it, folks.
Pineapple.
We're not helping out here. All right, Andre, what's up?
It's
after
the
after...
soapberry family, if that helps.
That does not help me whatsoever.
Mike, would you even know what to compare it to? I don't know if you eat much fruit, do you?
Me? Yeah, I eat a little fruit at least once or twice a year. So, yeah.
Just Google it to see what it looks like.
They look... I'm not going to talk about it. It's all good. They look strange.
That's a hard shell. Like, you're... to get to the fruit on the inside, so it's a real hard shell on the exterior. You don't eat the exterior of it. No, it's really good. So yeah, that's the one, definitely lychee.
There you go. So all right, well, we learned again. Maybe other people learned something. I'm still clueless, but so all right, Andre, what we got next?
Next up, we've got a question from Mac McDonald of the Grainy Days podcast, who asks, what's it like being the most handsome man on the islands? But seriously, what's your current favorite camera to shoot with and why?
The Minolta Autocord is the twin lens reflex. I just like the square format, and I really like twin lens reflex cameras because they're pretty light for 120. And I don't know, it's got a lens that just really pops, and it's pretty affordable as well. I think they only go for a couple hundred bucks, and the glass on them is just awesome. I love the Minolta lenses. So yeah, I'd say the Minolta Autocord, and I've been looking again, thinking about getting a Fuji GA645 until I saw the prices, because I used to have the GA645 ZI. Because I like point and shoots too, but I'd like a point and shoot 120. And I wish I never sold it because now they're like $800 for those cameras. Mm. And when I had one a few years ago, they were going for like $300-$400. So they doubled in price on eBay. But they're great cameras too.
You should look into, if you want a 645, the Pentax 645 is still relatively, I think it's one of the best values in medium format right now, truthfully, especially the older ones with the kind of the Casio watch looking buttons on the top of it. Right. Yeah, they go for pretty cheap, man. And they're fantastic cameras. So, of course, I'm going to endorse Pentax because it is working man's camera. But yeah.
No, my friend brought one over, John Canlis brought one over when he stayed at my house, and it was a really cool camera. I like it, but it's still a little big.
Right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, they're not. It's not a 6.7, but
it's not a 6.7. But have you ever seen the GA645s?
I've never held one in my hands. Actually, I've just seen photos. But yeah,
they're really portable. It's kind of like maybe like a Fuji Instax Wide.
Okay,
like carrying that around, but. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little more compact than that. So I like to travel. Like I used to go out with tons of cameras, but now I just take one, and it's usually always the Minolta Autocord I got with me. Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's my favorite one right now.
Do people like stop? Like, what's the overall kind of reception of, especially particularly old looking. Film cameras like a TLR there in Hawaii. Is it something that people like stop you and is like, oh, is that an old camera? Do they still make film for that?
Absolutely. Yep.
Wow, it's universal. It's universal.
Awesome. It is. No matter where you go, if you're carrying one of those, people are
going to stop you. Especially with that camera with the twin lens reflex. That's the one that always gets the most attention. Even more than like when I, well, or that or the speed graphic, but usually the twin lens reflex is what always does it. That's fun because, you know, you start up a conversation and then I get to tell them I have a dark room and then I find out if, you know, they're interested in shooting film. You should come by and check out the dark room. And I've had a couple people take some workshops just from walking around town and taking pictures with the camera. They see that and say, oh, cool. Oh, they still make film for those? Yeah, I got a dark room. And next thing you know, they're in the workshop. I do sometimes on the weekends.
Mm-hmm. Very awesome. Is there a lot of, like, do you notice a lot of film shooters out there?
Not on Big Island, but on Oahu, there's a lot of them. And a lot of my film shooting friends are out on Oahu, too.
Nice.
So we'll go camping and set up a dark room at the campground and stuff. And,
oh, my God. That's so cool.
Yeah, my buddy Chris, he's got a van again, you know, and he'll put the dark room in the van again. And just like a generator, portable generator. And
oh, my gosh. That's like a dream.
And we'll make prints at the campground and stuff. We'll develop film while we're out camping. And we shot like 8x10 sheet film and developed it out there on the campground and then made contact prints and stuff. So
stop. This is like a dream. I'm going to be dreaming of this tonight. Like, I can't even. This is my amazing.
My kind of camping trip, man. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm in on that camping trip.
Portable darkroom, pop-up darkrooms, he calls them. So it's the analog sunshine recorders on Instagram.
Oh, my gosh. I want to go.
So just rent out a space for a month, and then for the first 3 days they have the space, they'll set up like a community darkroom, and everybody shoots with a theme, and then they'll come in, develop all the negatives, make prints, and then put them up in a gallery, and then we'll have a showing.
How fun!
Yeah, it's called the Analog Sunshine Recorder. So Oahu has a real big, thriving film community, and it's really centered around Treehouse. The Treehouse photography store out there.
That was an Instagram account that's for that. So we can check that out. Is that right?
Analog Sunshine Recorders is the Instagram account. And then Treehouse is my buddy Bobby, who has the film store out there, Treehouse Hawaii. Yeah.
Wow. Very, very cool. What about like film selection out there? Do you pretty much get most of the film selection, or is it just like primarily Fuji and Kodak, or do you get some of the weird stuff, or does that pretty much have to be ordered from the mainland?
Yeah, out here there's you know, like Walmart, Target, and long CVS drugs and stuff. They just have the Fuji and Kodak stuff. Mm-hmm. Target and Walmart. I think Walmart has like the Fuji Superior. But other than that, that's it. You have to go to Oahu to Treehouse to buy anything. Otherwise, it's order it from the mainland. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Well, I'll give you credit, man. You gotta be pretty dedicated to be a film shooter there. It's a little more difficult, right? So
it's a little bit more expensive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just to get it shipped out here and stuff.
Are you kidding me, though? That just sounds so dreamy. Like surf culture, Hawaii, camping, portable dark room. I'm in love with all that. That's
weird. Yeah, it's very fun. We have a great time together.
Weird fruits and all kinds
weird of and, you know,
you're talking about my friends.
You know, y'all can have your spam. I don't know about that, but
it's delicious. It's a cornerstone of my breakfast now. Go to McDonald's, you get the white rice, the spam, and the eggs for breakfast.
do they call that a mixed spam? What is it? What's that called?
Breakfast plate.
Nice. All right, Andre, where are we at?
Let's finish off with probably, you know, the question that I'll bunch of people were waiting for from Chris Visser, my buddy here in LA, asks, Mr. Caputo, what's your favorite dad joke?
Ooh, that's a tough one. That is definitely a tough one. How did Darth Vader know what Luke got him for his birthday? He felt his presence.
I got to say, my favorite dad joke, and actually it was given to me by Neil Piper, and I say this one all the time, Neil from the Soot and Whitewash podcast, he sent this in. We had a dad joke competition on this podcast, and his was two windmills are out in the field, and one windmill says to the other, "Hey, man, what kind of music are you into?" And the other one says, "I'm a big metal fan." So, and
Slayer.
I will say this: being a factory worker, and I'm sure I've told these jokes on the show, but there was one time I was really just bothered by having to work in a factory. It's very mind numbing. It's a soul killing kind of job. So your mind wanders, and I was like, you know, I got thinking about jokes and. And you think, like, okay, people make up jokes, obviously, and these jokes get spread somehow. Somebody had to make them up. So I figured, like, I'm going to spend this 10-hour shift tonight. I'm going to make up my own joke, like a joke that I wrote. And so I came up with not one, but two jokes. And these are Gutterman originals. I'm not saying they're good, but I did make them up, and I keep spreading them. I keep saying them everyone I run into, hoping that one day someone will tell me my joke back to me, you know, like...
Will it happen? Like,
so the first one is, what did the peanut say on the way to the peanut butter factory?
What?
I'll be back in a jiff. What? The other one. So I got my clean jokes. I feel like I needed something a little dirtier, a little more risky. All right. What did they start calling the rabbit? What did they nickname the rabbit that got caught cheating on his wife? Peter Cottontail. Peter Cottontail. What?
Cottontail.
This thing on?
Hey, Mike.
Yes.
What's worse than ants in your pants? Uncles.
Okay. Well, I guess. Okay. I knew I was gonna like this episode. But all right. So, let's go ahead and take a break and recover from those bad jokes, and we'll come back and finish with some follow up questions that we'd like to ask Mr.
I
Mike.
I mean, it's worse, right? It is worse.
No questions were so. All right, folks, we'll take a break and be right back. All right, folks, we're back for the final segment with Mr. Mike Caputo, and this has been a lot of fun. So, but we want to kind of follow up with just some questions here. The co-captains, the hosts, want to follow up with Mike. So we'll start with Andre. What would you like to kind of follow up?
So you mentioned before that the business model of the Hawaii Darkroom has changed a little bit since its inception. What would you say are kind of some of the challenges that you faced putting it together, and what does the Hawaii Darkroom look like these days?
It was pretty challenging to put together. Fortunately, it was crowdfunded through Kickstarter. I had offered prints, and so many people jumped on board that we met our funding goal. So hunting down all the equipment, there was a Air Force base on Oahu that was closing a darkroom at the same time. I just happened to be trying to open one out here. So we were very fortunate to get a bunch of gear from them. I had one of my co-workers at the fire department. He's also a firefighter in the Air Force Reserve. So he was able to go on that base, FaceTime me, and I picked out a ton of gear that we got a really good deal on. And then, so setting it up was pretty difficult. Getting people into the dark room was challenging. I tried to do workshops, and at first they were doing really well, but it tapered off. The workshops were sort of covering the rent, and then people just sort of stopped coming to the workshops, I guess. I don't know. There's only so much interest in film photography still, no matter how much I tried to gin it up. It's a small island. Well, population-wise, anyway. And it's pretty spread out. So every now and then, I still get some calls and messages, and some random people will come by just to try to develop a role or give a lesson. But I also got promoted at work and transferred to the other side of the island. So I couldn't keep business hours anymore. So what I decided to do was give the members we have a key to the dark room. They could use it whenever they like. So we no longer have hours. We just have a monthly membership fee. It's $50 a month. But with that, you get a key, and you get to use it at any time, which is a nice thing to have. So
yeah.
Gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah, there's no hours, $50 a month, so we've got 7 members. So it's more like a co-op almost now. I mean, it doesn't make any money. I don't care. I mean, that's not why it's there. I just want to be able to have the space and have it for the community. So occasionally I'll get people who are on vacation. They stop by, and they want to develop a role or get a lesson, and I'll charge them like $30 to develop a roll of film, show them how to do it. They could scan it so they go home with their negatives and scans. Or if they want to develop and print, I'll just charge them like $50. And for a few hours or whatever at the most, take like 2 hours, 2.5 hours or so, I think, to do that. So that's how we're kind of keeping afloat. And the front room I leased out to a dear friend of mine, good family friend. She's a psychologist, so she's got her practice in the front, and the dark room is in the back, and so she pays half the rent. So now, you know, film shooters are kind of weirdos, so you could go to the dark room, you could develop some prints, and get your head checked at the same time.
So your dark room is kind of like a mullet haircut. It's like business in the front, party in the back. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, it works. So I don't even have a sign on the door for the dark room anymore, and I don't advertise on social media, or I don't advertise at all. I don't care, as long as the bills get paid. You know, if you find out about us and you want to come down, that's great. But I spend so much time traveling to work on the other side of the island, and then with all the overtime I have to do and how much I get held back, I just couldn't keep hours anymore. And I couldn't have, I didn't have the time to do workshops on the weekend. So I had to figure out a way just to keep it open, to generate some kind of revenue. So that's when I switched over, gave everyone who was a member a key, and also let my friend rent the front space for her new practice. So yeah, we're a psychology workshop and a darkroom workshop.
Nice. Yeah, I think a lot of us could use a little bit of counseling from time to time with our guests and all that stuff. So might work out. I can see where that's going. So yeah.
But she's also good friends with my wife, so I don't know how much I want, you know, especially with the gas part. I don't let the old lady know how much I spend on cameras. So. Well, there you go. Yeah, so that's sort of the new All model. Right.
So, right. Roxanna, what would you have for? Well, one thing I will say before we get to Roxanna, like, is it to the point where you think you can sustain this over the next coming years, or do you feel like it's still a little touch and go at this point?
No, I mean, we're going to be there. And like I said, I don't really care if I lose a little bit of money. I mean, if I have to pull out $100 out of my pocket a month to keep it going, that's fine. As long as I'm not pulling out thousands, right? I mean, I'm willing to spend $100 out of my pocket. I just don't have the time to advertise or do the workshops like I used to. So I kind of look at it just like a co-op right now.
Yeah.
Members are really happy with it. Everybody loves having their own key to come whenever they like to use the space. Mm-hmm. I mean, they'd all rather have that than have to abide by ours.
Yeah, I have to pay rent for a rehearsal space for my music, a band, a rehearsal space downtown in downtown Louisville. And, you know, I pay monthly on this. And if I was to give up music because I wasn't making money, I would have stopped playing music a long time ago. So, but it's another situation where I have a key. I can go 24/7 anytime and go play a guitar as loud as I want and not disturb anybody. So, you know, I look at it as like it's just my space to go be creative. And so I guess if you're looking at it like that, where, you know, hey, it's my space. If it happens to pay for itself, that's great. You know, but, you know, I can see where you're kind of that angle you're coming from there. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how I do look at it. This was never a for-profit business for
right.
me. I was just hoping to break even and have this space downtown in Hilo open to the community. And, you know, then I got a darkroom that I could use whenever I want instead of lugging all that shit in the bathroom every other weekend or so and having the old lady yell at me, like, because the kids are using our bathroom all the time. When are you going to take that stuff out of the bathroom? So it's nice. My own space to go downtown now. So yeah, I just signed a new lease for a year. So we're going to be there another year for sure.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I tell you what, if I ever make it back to the land where I was conceived, I definitely have to stop in there. Right. So
you bet, Mike. Better. I'll be insulted if you don't.
Absolutely. I'd never want to insult you, brother. So there you go. All right. Roxanna, what did you have for Mike?
I want to convince my family to move there, and I want a key. That's what I want. Like, how can I make this happen?
Yeah.
That is so rad. I love the membership concept of just, I love it. I'm so insanely jealous right now that I can barely even think of my question. But I do have questions. Okay. All right. So, that infrared film that you shot your Instagram.
Yeah, it's awesome. Oh. Yeah.
Aerochrome.
Like, seriously, I'm so scared to shoot my one roll I have in my freezer because I'm so scared of, like, fucking it up. But because you can't even get it. It's like $1 million for a roll and you can't even find it. And but I love the couple shots that you posted. What was it like to shoot it and where did you have it developed? And
so I sent it to the Darkroom Lab in California to develop.
Okay. We know them.
I shot it in the Minolta AutoCord and I used the orange filter and I just used the light meter app on the iPhone to meter for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I shot a few frames over and a couple frames under. So I sort of half bracket them, right? I didn't do an under and evenly exposed and then an over. I just, for one frame, I went one under and then exposed. And for the next frame, I just went whatever the light meter said and then one stop over. And that's kind of how I bracketed because I only had 12 shots to work with. And I was happy with the results. I liked it. I think they came out pretty cool. They are awesome.
And right. That's what I was wondering is like, what filter did you use? I love those shots so much.
So I used the orange filter.
Okay. Very cool. I'm going to get like my my bravery, my courage up because I need a shoot.
Well, you gotta shoot it.
I know. Fine. Oh, it's in my freezer. Has been for a year.
It wasn't so bad for me because M from Emulsive sent me the role as a gift, so I wasn't too worried about messing it up.
That's a rad gift.
That is a hell of a gift.
That's really sweet of them.
That really is.
Thank you, M, if you're listening.
You know, when people give you gifts like that, I love it. Like I did a shoot for a really good friend of mine and she's another film shooter and she does all this really great wedding work, but she gave me a pack of the pack film that, you know, is hard to find too. Uh-huh. The peel apart pack film, but that's also in the refrigerator. I'm scared to shoot that too.
Yeah, but shoot it. Yeah, so yeah. I did a workshop. We did a darkroom workshop with John Canlis. He came out here and we did like a joint photography/darkroom workshop. He took care of like the photo stuff with the people who signed up. And I took them through all the darkroom portion of it. And it was a 3-day workshop. So it was a lot of fun. And when he was out here, M had sent 2 rolls of the Aerochrome, for one for John and one for myself, but it didn't come in time. So fortunately, John left before it arrived. And I got
and, nice.
John was supposed to come back out, but it never worked out. We never were able to do a second workshop, and I didn't run into him. So when Emulsive Secret Santa came around, I thought, oh, you know what I'll do? I'll gift it.
My gosh. Why couldn't you have been my Secret
Santa?
That's exactly
what I was going to say.
So that's what I did. I gifted it. And then after I posted, that was before I even posted the pictures. And then John was like, oh, my God, do you still have that role for me?
Oh, shut up.
I was like, yeah, no, sorry about that, buddy. He's like, you bastard.
So for folks that don't know, that the Aerochrome, it's a color infrared from Kodak, right? And what do you, when you shot it, you did a little bit of bracketing. Do you happen to remember if it was the under or over or just the dead on meter reading that came out best? Any tip on that?
I believe the dead on metering is the ones that
really?
I post. Yeah, I think okay. So. I think I only put a couple of them up right now. I'm not sure. I don't remember. But the ones I did, I think, was dead on metering. Yeah.
Huh. That's encouraging. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. I have a roll of the Kodak, the HIE infrared, the black and white infrared. Mm-hmm. I have one roll of it. And, man, I'm like you, Roxanne. It's been sitting in my freezer. And I'm like, I got to have the perfect time to use this. And because I only got one roll of it. And I'll probably bracket the hell out of it just to make sure I get something out of it. Because I have no idea how it's been stored. It came in like a lot of film that I bought locally. And it just happened to be in there. And I was like, what is this? And so, yeah. And so I don't even know if it's any good. But, man, I hope it's good.
I think there is some Aerochrome out there still left. The Aerochrome shop is the website if you Google it, but it's like $50 a roll for one roll of 120, I think, right now. But I think that's pretty much the only place left to get it. And once that's gone, it's gone forever.
I really wish you would have just said that, like while we were talking in between the show. That's a selfish me. I'm sorry.
Such a neat film, though. It's cool.
It's so good.
Especially now that we have 7 billion listeners. So, I mean,
I know.
Wow. Expanded that listener base.
I think it's growing just by the minute. It's all you, Mike. That's why. So,
Oh, well, yes. I have one more question.
Go ahead.
That photograph you made of your son being Elvis. Oh, my God. I love it so much. So he is so adorable. I love him. So where was that taken?
At my house.
Oh, my gosh.
When I got a lot of the darkroom stuff, there were some photo backdrops just packed into all the gear. So this is, it's just like this purple backdrop. I just nailed it up in the carport And he stood in front of it and did his best Elvis impression. I mean, the kid's got, he watches all the Elvis movies. He's got all the albums. He's got records. And,
oh, wow. You
know, he's been Elvis 3 years running for Halloween. So he, just, nice. He hasn't been Fat Elvis yet, but he's FBI Elvis. He's been in Jailhouse Rock Elvis.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love it. I love that photograph so much. Thank so, you. And all of your work, it's like the black and white work. It is so reminiscent of the greats that are in that era that I love so much of like the 50s and the 60s. It's just so good. You really have the ability of capturing so much emotion and the human condition of relationships. It's just really magnificent.
That's very yeah. nice to hear. Thank you so much.
Well, I think there's like looking through your feed, Mike, there is like a timeless feel to your photography, and you know I give you the credit for that. But I wonder too is it your environment you think that kind of makes it like give it that classic feel, or like because there is like this I don't know like, to me it seems like I know there's just classic feel to it. I don't know how to explain any better than that. But like, do you think that's something you've developed, or do you think it's your surroundings? How did you kind of come up with kind of getting this sort of style to your photography?
I don't know. I really like people, but I also like the landscape as well. So right. I like a little bit of both. I like having people in the landscape. And mm-hmm. I don't really go out with a plan of shooting. I just take my camera with me and take pictures of how I see things. So I always have a camera with me, and I don't needlessly take photographs either. I just, you know, if I'm having a good time or I'm in the moment, I say, you know, I want a picture of this. So I don't pre-plan much of my photography at all. I always have a camera, and I was like, "Oh, this is seems like a good time to take a picture," and that's what I do.
Mm. Yeah. I was hoping you'd give me some sort of tip that would really just open up a key, like a key to open up the lock of.
I don't know. I don't think I'm that good, but it's nice to hear.
Well, it's very Henri Cartier-Bresson, I think. Like, the style of your black and white work is just beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
One of my favorite of your series of images are the stuff that you've done with, like, the live fire tests at the... It looks like to be a some sort of, like, a runway with the Holga that you're doing.
Oh, yeah. I think that was for Holga Week, maybe, where I taped the Holga to my fire helmet.
And oh, nice.
So, oh, my God.
Yeah. We have live fire exercises where we'll dump about 500 gallons of jet fuel into a pit and let it all on fire. And so we use the crash trucks to try to put it out. And then I always have a camera with me for that because it's just... You know, when you light up 500 gallons of jet fuel, it's impressive.
I'm sure.
Yeah. And then I like to take pictures of all the guys at work as well. And I'll make prints in the dark room, usually 8x10 prints of that, and frame them and put them in the station. So
oh, that's awesome.
The station is just filled with candids and portraits and just stuff that the guys are doing. Some of the guys, you know, I've been doing it for a few years now, so some of the guys have already retired, but they still have their black and white picture up on the wall from that time frame.
That's so nice. Cool. I bet that's
so last cool. a long time. So instead of all these big color photographs or whatever, it's all, you know, framed 8x10 black and whites hung throughout the station. It's neat. Awesome. Everybody who comes through there, they seem to enjoy those, taking looks at those and stuff. Yeah, good fun.
Oh, how cool is that? All right, Mike. Well, as far as what I wanted to ask is like, okay, you live on the Big Island, right?
Correct.
So is like, you know, I think a lot of us have like stereotypes of Hawaii. We have, you know, the ideal what we think Hawaii looks like. But is it the Big Island that has actually quite a bit of like different geography than what we're maybe used to seeing with Hawaii? Because I wonder like how, like if you ever kind of feel like, you're running out of ideals or whatever, but do you find that this particular island has a lot of different geography that maybe is not what we're what we kind of expect when we think of the stereotype of Hawaii?
Yeah, absolutely. There's, I think, 11 different climate zones on this island. I think it's 11. So wow. You could go, you know, from lush jungle to the desert on the west side to rainforests all the way up to subglacial. Like I said, we have snow on the top of Mauna Kea right now. Nothing grows up past like 11, 12,000 feet. So it's a 14-foot thousand peak. Yeah, so it is definitely, you know, different from what I imagined too before I first came out here. You just think of palm trees and the beach, right?
Right, right.
You know, there's like the mini Grand Canyon out on Kauai, and it's beautiful and it's very dynamic, especially the Big Island. We just had an eruption last year.
Yeah.
That was spewing out 26,000 gallons of lava a minute. And I had a front row seat for that for work because I was called down there. So, you know, I brought a Nikon F3 with me when I was on the front line, and it was definitely one of the most impressive things I've ever seen, watching that eruption and being so close to it. It was a pretty big hardship for the island, and but I've never seen anything like that. It was just awe-inspiring to watch that.
Is the heat just absolutely intense from that? It has to be, right?
Yeah, it was. I mean, you could be 10 feet away from a giant lava flow, and it's not too bad. And then you just get a few feet closer, and you have to turn your back on it immediately.
Wow.
Because I saw rivers of lava moving at like 20, 30 miles per hour that were 100 yards wide.
Oh, and my gosh.
It's a real impressive thing to be close to Mother Nature like that, for sure.
Right, right.
Holga melting temperatures right there.
Oh yeah.
So another question I would have, kind of again about maybe the stereotype of Hawaii, which, I mean, you're big, you like, you know, shoot a lot of black and white, and you do some color, but like, to me, when you think Hawaii, you think color photography. Like, so do you approach like black and white being in such a colorful, like what most people see as a tropical paradise sort of situation, which would seem to scream color photography? How do you approach like, okay, yeah, but I like black and white and I'm going to do that because that's what I dig, and I got a dark room and I'm going to print this shit. So like yeah. how do you make those decisions when it comes to like going out and shooting and choosing between black and white and color in an area that you would think color seems to be the natural choice, but you seem to go the opposite direction?
Well, I think you can shoot anything in black and white, right?
Yeah.
You really have to see it that way. And you just approach it differently, right? Because what might really pop in color could just look flat and super boring in black and white. Mm-hmm. So once you get the eye and the feel for black and white, I'm a firm believer that you could shoot any subject in black and white and it could be beautiful. I guess it's something that's, you know, if you're in the tropics in a real lush and colorful place, especially if it's landscape, you just develop over time, I suppose.
Sure,
I
mean, sure.
I don't think I have a great eye for anything, but I don't know. Yeah, it's just the way I see stuff, I guess.
Wow, that makes a ton of sense, man. Like, you know, because I feel like for me, when I go out and shoot, it depends. Like, if I go out with just black and white or just color, Murphy's Law likes to play tricks on me. And like, if I'm out with black and white, I see nothing but like bright colors. And I'm like, I wish I had color film. So now I go out loaded for bear. I go out loaded with color and black and white. Cause it seems like whatever if I try to stay with one, I find subjects that would work better in the other. So,
it's been a lot of trial and error though, too, because I've had plenty of rolls of black and white film where I'm like, everything on this roll sucks. It's all boring. Nothing worked on it. So a little bit of trial and error as well, just to see what does work in certain times of the day and locations and stuff. Yeah.
One of the things
I really like nighttime black and white. That's what I really enjoyed doing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I'm interested in doing once I scan in these photos that I've been taking with 800T, both during the day and at night, is to scan them as black and white and see what the results are. Because I think it might have been Mac, I'm pretty sure it was Mac McDonald on the Grainy Days podcast that was talking about recently shooting. He's starting to kind of get into street photography now. And he was mentioning on the podcast that he's considering shooting exclusively color and then deciding between, you know, the actual color image that he scans in or converting it to black and white, just so that you have options for both. Because I know that I encounter that quite a bit where I've got black and white loaded up in the camera and I come across something that I'm like, man, I'm going to take the photo anyway, but I know that it would be better in color. So having the option of shooting it default in color and then converting it to black and white later seems like an interesting, you know, position to take. I don't know if I do that exclusively because I don't know if you can get the same results, you know, versus shooting a dedicated black and white film, but it is something interesting to try.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. One of the main reasons, like I said, is because I have a darkroom and I just enjoy the whole process of hand developing and making a nice print on fiber paper. There's nothing that's so pretty to me as a fiber print after you finish the whole process up that looks really, really detailed and sharp. And like the Ilford Classic matte paper. When you get a print on that, it's just gorgeous. So.
One question I do have is all this talk about black and white film made me remember a question from the Facebook group that Andre skipped over, and I'm going to have to put this out here because I want to razz Neil Piper from Soot and Whitewash podcast because we had we went back and forth about this a little bit when I appeared on his podcast. But he said HP5 has a fight with Tri-X. Who wins?
Tri-X.
Yes.
America, baby.
America.
America. Oh yeah.
So you pretty much
Kodak D76 is the best combination on earth.
It's classic.
That's what I do. That's what I like.
I love it. So there you go, Neil. Eat it. It's Tri-X. kicking that HP5's ass.
So outstanding.
All right. Well, I think it's about time to start wrapping up this episode. I know Mike has to get up early and yell at new. Are they like new firefighters you're yelling at? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, there's 21 fresh recruits that are going to be in the fire academy for the next year. So,
Wow. Well, yep. I'm sure you get to whip them into shape. So, and we want you to have plenty of rest so you can yell at them properly. So, but Mike, it's been a real blast having you on the show, man. This has been a real fun episode, and just thank you so much for coming on. It's been cool.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Well, let's go ahead and kind of get our socials out there. So, Mike, how about you tell the fine folks where to check you out?
Mike Caputo, Aloha_BigMike on the Instagram, and I have just recently popped back on the Flickr at Aloha_BigMike, so very easy. And awesome. I'm on the Facebook as well, Mike Caputo.
And Mike, I happen to notice you're not a member of the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group. What's going on there? I don't know.
I'm not. Is that right? Okay. I'm going to have to be.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
You're in the club now.
Right. All right. So, Roxana, where can people check you out?
People can check me out on my Instagram, RoxanaLog. And that's about it.
Awesome. And Andre, where can people see the new 2020 Andre? I feel like this Instagram is going to start heating up. I feel like.
Wait, Mike, you're not a girls rock album, are you?
What?
No, that must be the wrong negative positive. Here we go. Okay, got you now. I'm going to unjoin that group for whatever it is I just liked. Okay. Sorry, Negative Positive Girl Band. I just unlike you. Okay.
Wait, I'll be crying now.
I might have to check that out. I might have to have him on the show. It might be kind of cool. It could be a lot cooler than what I've got going on here. But All right, Andre, how about your Instagram? That's going to be heating up, getting hot, right?
We'll see about that. We'll see if this new rate of shooting and developing and scanning will actually translate to posting. But you can find me on Instagram at Andre on Film.
All right, you can see my photography on Facebook at Mike Gutterman Photography, on Instagram at Gutterman Photo. You can email this program at negpositives@gmail.com. You can join the Facebook group like Mike Caputo just did, or some other Facebook group called Negative Positives, possibly. I don't know, but it's called.
It's a request right now, Mike. It's just a request. So
if you get the ending tagline in at the end of this show, I'll let you in. So that's the challenge. So it's the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group. We also have an Instagram account under the account name Negative Positives, mostly ran by a friend of the show, Mr. Bryce Randall. If you submit photos to Instagram, think about using the hashtag Negative Positives, and maybe Bryce will see it and highlight it for all of us to check out. And also, we should mention the coffee page that we have, Ko-fi, or coffee, ko-fi / Negative Positives, if you'd like to support the show. And the last thing is, this is episode 299. That would mean that 300 is supposed to land next week. It will not. I will do a solo show next week. It'll be 299.5. It's kind of a tradition on the show anyway. And then 2 weeks from now, we will have the 300th episode with all the giveaways. I think we have around 60 prizes, or maybe over 60 prizes to give away to the listeners. So it's going to be super awesome. So next week, a solo show, 299.5. And 2 weeks from now, we'll all be back together for the big 300th episode giveaway. So just wanted to get that out there, a little disclaimer. So and again, thanks to Mr. Mike Caputo for joining us. It was super fun, and he was an awesome guest. So everybody have a great week. We will talk to you soon. Everybody stay positive.
Stay positive and shoot film.
So shoot some cool film photos, and now you don't get in the Negative Positives group now.
Shoot some cool film photos. Film is neat.
That'll work. I guess we'll let you in. All right, folks. We'll see you soon. Thanks for listening.
I'm ready to take any questions you may have, Mike. Please, ask me the questions. Provided they come with a good Italian beef sandwich.
That's a little Chicago Blues Brothers reference going on there. I like it, Mike.
Okay, oh my gosh. Best movie ever made in the history of movies.
That's right. You know what?
That's great.
Stand by the statement, man. I hate Illinois Nazis, man.
You know. It's one of the greatest musicals of all times, by far.
Yeah. You know, we had Johnny Sisson from Carpet Winkler's podcast on. We had a debate on what was the best Chicago movie, Blues Brothers or Ferris Bueller. So I'm guessing we're going Blues Brothers.
This could be a challenging question. Yeah. I would have to... I'd have to say the Blues Brothers. Yeah. But Ferris Bueller comes... That's almost like asking in a fight between Coach Ditka and 12 little Ditkas that equal the size of one Ditka, who would win?
So, do you often go around saying "Da Bears"?
I often do, but no longer. Football has died for me after 1985.
Right.
Well, you know what's funny? Patrick Mahomes was supposed to be on the Chicago Bears. That's just a fact. They passed him up, and it was a travesty. I mean, I'm happy for the Chiefs and everything, But that should be a Bears Super Bowl win, if you ask me. Not the Chiefs.
A Gutter Man Cave production!